All right, here we go. What's up with the sups up, Playful Banter podcast listeners? Back with you once again, Kyle and Robbie, with a very special guest who has not been heard from on this podcast for a long, long time. At least not in person. We read his emails quite a bit. But it is a pleasure to have our shadow minister of Great Kingland, and he's going to explain what the heck that means. Patrick Hewitt. Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Living the dream.
Aren't we all? Are we all? Kyle. Mm-hmm. Tell the people how you're doing.
I am like a remodeled bathroom that was remodeled probably circa 2016.
The whole bathroom. Not even just an item of the bathroom. The whole bathroom. Mm-hmm. 2016. A good year for bathroom items, if I remember correctly.
Subway tiles were big in bathrooms that year, I believe.
Yeah. The tile from Subway restaurants, right? That's what you mean?
Correct. A lot of Italian urban cheese.
So you're feeling pretty new, pretty fresh, Kyle? Now fresh is in my head because of Subway. feeling pretty fresh, Kyle? Pretty modern, sleek, maybe? I think some maybe stainless. You're feeling a little stainless steel, sharp edges, and strong white lighting. Am I hot? Am I cold? Am I?
What kind of bathroom did you go into in 2016?
I don't know. My bathroom in 2016 sucked, but
stainless steel with strong white lighting.
I don't know. Isn't that what modern bathrooms tend to look like? I don't know. I don't have any. 2016, my bathroom was, I think, last redone in like the 1970s. So I don't actually know what a 2016 bathroom looks like. But if you had like done a remodel in 2016 with all new stuff, I imagine it would have been pretty clean and bright and sharp. I think sharp.
Very sharp.
It's like those modern houses that all look like boxes.
How are you doing, Robbie?
You want to move on from the bathroom analogy, huh?
It didn't take us that long to get to bathroom talk.
Yeah. Yeah. We stayed away from the toilet, though. Notice I didn't talk about the toilet.
I'm actually shocked.
Yeah. Well, you didn't say you replaced the toilet. I guess
I know, but I figured when I said bathroom, you would go straight to human waste.
You're feeling like the place people go to just crap on everything. That could be true. There's something there, but we're going to move on. I don't know. I'm thinking, I don't know. It's just kind of, it's a weird transition kind of period. I think that I did the math and I'm like halfway through the like distance learning part of the school year. We're like a month down and we have a month left or a little over a month left. And it's just like, it's kind of flying by. At the same time, it sucks. So,
do you feel better now than when you started?
Yeah, I've gotten into more of a rhythm now. Like, I kind of understand what it is. I'm just kind of also coming to terms like, hey, the kids kind of suck at this. And I can't really blame them because we all kind of suck at this.
I would have sucked at it as a kid, too.
Yeah, so I don't know. We're still working some things out, like graduation and all that. But we're making the best of it. We're making it work. The sun is shining. I like to sit outside and teach some when I can. Pat, this is where you enter a very smooth segue into our Woman of the Week.
Ah, yes. It's relating to teaching because she does teach us many things about life. It is the writer, Robin Wright, not the actress.
Twist,
exactly. So, Robin Wright is an American foreign affairs journalist. She's written for the Washington Post, New York Times, all the big ones, LA Times. And she's currently a writer for The New Yorker. She has reported primarily on foreign affairs, focusing on the Middle East. And she's won numerous awards, written several books, And she is one of the top writers in her field, covering an area of the world where being a journalist and a woman, let alone a female journalist, are not exactly the best things. But she, I came across some of her work in college studying foreign affairs, and I still read her stuff every now and then, and a lot of people back in D.C. read her stuff. So if you want to know what everybody in Washington and everybody deciding our lives are reading, Robin Wright. And that's your Woman of the Week.
That's a good one. I had not heard of the writer Robin Wright.
Yeah, because the other one, the actress is in House of Cards, isn't she?
Yeah.
Isn't she the... Yeah. That's a good pick, Pat. How did you know her? Like, when we asked you if you have a Woman of the Week idea, you had her in mind right away.
Well, because I've been thinking about that whenever you guys pick a Woman of the Week, you guys tend to pick a woman who's no longer living. And so I was like, maybe we should focus on...
It's like half and half. It's like half and half.
Yeah, so I just thought, oh, this woman, because I came across her writing, like I said, in college, and like I read her books and all that stuff, and so... Yeah, really good writer, covers a lot of stuff, good info.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. So everybody go read the work of Robin Wright. That honestly sounds like someone that when they write a biography, I'm going to want to read that, because I would love to hear the stories of what it's like you said, to be a woman in the Middle East, like looking for answers and asking questions of men in a society where that is not really a thing that women do.
Do you think her last name influenced her career at all?
It probably did. I mean, just kind of, you know, focused her on one thing. If her last name was Smith, she would have focused on smithing. But I think Kyle might like her because her latest book was the first book I read of her was called Rock the Casbah, which is a Clash song, which is, you know, ooh, is she talking about rock and roll or is she talking about the Middle East? You'll have to read and find out.
A teaser. I thought you were going to tell me. Oh, no. So, to kind of transition, Robin Wright would actually be a strong candidate to be in the cabinet of Great Kingland, alongside Pat herself.
We could use some good writing in the kingdom.
I think we need like a ledger person.
I'm
like
angry ledgerman. That the Pulitzer Prizes were just announced and we weren't part of it.
I know. We each wrote like two blogs this year.
You know that Isaiah Thomas clip where it's like, I know the criteria that they used and they didn't select me or whatever?
Yep, I tweeted it.
Yeah, I felt like that should happen with us in the Pulitzer Prize.
You did meet the criteria.
We met all the criteria, but we were not
selected. Make sure to hit him up. I'll hit him up on Twitter and just I'll tag him and I'll put that video in there and just be like, we demand answers. How did you not select Kyle's March playlist to win a Pulitzer? I think that is a major oversight and it does a disservice to the whole operation. But alongside Robin, we did some interviewing. Last week, we interviewed for three different positions. Kyle, how do you think the interviews went? You think they went well? You think they disappointed?
By and large, I think they went very well. Like I said afterwards, I think we did very well in them, which is the most important part of the interview.
It's true. It's true.
And I do think we had some quality candidates. They came up with positions that I would not have come up with, which I think is good. It means we have some diversity of thought, which is necessary. And I think they performed decently.
I would have to agree. And especially since we're sitting here with the only member of that ministry cabinet who didn't have to interview at all.
Exactly.
And Kyle's still pissed about that, by the way. He brings it up all the time. He's like, you guys just decided. I was like, well, you should have been there. That's not my fault.
Exactly. That was at a bar.
I made a good pitch. It was at a bar.
Yeah.
Of course it was at a bar. That's where all
and
good ideas
working,
come
and
from.
And I showed up at the bar later, and all of a sudden we had a shadow minister.
And you asked, what is that? And I'm like, I don't know.
But we got
sounded
one.
Sounded good, though. Yeah. Yeah, it's like that kitchen utensil that you buy because it's shiny and like packaged well, and you're just like, I don't know what it does, but it seems like something my kitchen needs.
Exactly.
Pat is he's the Swiss Army knife of... shadows, I guess. I don't know. And we're going to have Pat elaborate on exactly what that is, really for as much of our edification as the listeners. But before we get to that, I think that we should formally announce the acceptance into the cabinet for Jeremy Wan, who will be the Minister of Ministers, essentially our chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie Brenny Wan will be our Minister of Alcohols.
What was her name? Felicity Snufflepants or something?
Yes. Snuggle Tree.
Snuggle Tree.
Yes. Felicity Snuggle Tree. She'll be the minister of all the alcohols. And then Chester Lee Allen will be the minister of mansions while also being the ninja minister of gifting. Gifting? Gif? Gifts?
I say gifs, so.
Well, you're wrong.
Yeah. It's everybody agrees. You're wrong. And that will be his first job in his job is to make very clear how to pronounce it. And it will not be your way. So congratulations to those three. The offer always stands to any of our listeners. If there is a ministry position you dream of, dare to dream, dare to ask, because we will give you an interview. And clearly the bar is not super high. So you got a good shot. Doesn't pay anything yet, but it is still a position of prestige.
But there will be spirits.
Oh, yeah. There's spirits, all right. Spirits and just spirit. Yes. And ghosts. All of the different forms of spirits. Pat.
Yes.
What is your job as Shadow Minister? Why don't you tell Kyle what you... what you told me that night, which made it sound so good.
Okay, so...
Neither of you remember what he said that night.
Well, he's going to make something up and it's going to sound good. Shut up.
So, in a traditional government system involving parliament, democracies, all that stuff, the party in opposition is called a shadow government, where they have shadow versions of every other position. So, there would be a shadow secretary of state, minister of war, all that stuff. So it kind of keep the ruling party in check. And so you guys being the ruling party, I'm the shadow minister keeping you guys in check.
You agreed to this, Robbie?
I don't think this is what he said.
That's how it traditionally works in a normal government system.
I thought it was like where vampires and stuff hang out.
But since Great Kingland is not a normal functioning government.
Which is the turn I needed.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need to.
I do pretty much everything else. I'm kind of more like the seedy underside of Great Kingland. Like where all the gambling, all the dirty jokes, all that stuff.
That's what I thought.
Well, I had to make it sound good and convincing and then, hit him with the left turn.
See, yeah, that was suspenseful. I got very afraid that Kyle was really never going to forgive me. I think having you basically be in charge of the black market of Great Kingland makes a lot of sense and all the underground happenings.
Yeah, that's fair.
Until one day I rise up and stage a coup, but, we'll deal with that when we get there.
Well, and honestly, every great civilization in history has had to weather those, and so it would be insulting if nobody ever tried to take us out of power, and I feel confident that we'll be able to fight you off. But in the meantime, it's good to know somebody who knows where all of the back room poker games are. And
I know where all the illegal frozen yogurt is.
You should just be the minister of illegal frozen yogurt.
It's pretty specific.
That's a yes, but can you imagine if that's your only job?
That is a very tight window of responsibility, and I like that.
Yeah. You come to the cabinet meetings. Pat, where's all the illegal frozen yogurt? There is none. Okay. Good job. Keep it that way. Keep it under control. I don't know. Kyle, do you feel better now? I think you should feel better.
I have never had a problem with Pat being shadow minister until he started talking about what it actually meant, and then I had a problem, and then he eased those problems. I was more a problem with the process at which he became shadow minister.
I know. I'm like Rihanna. I'm unapologetic.
And that's I will the only pwn way the in which you're like Rihanna.
And I will pwn the replay. I'll write a blog about how I'm like Rihanna. That'll be my blog this week.
I'll feel like a surprise.
Yeah. I dare them to ignore us this time. I'll send it directly to them. And then I'll CC the Nobel Prize too. Being like, you jerks have ignored us for long enough as well.
Our shadow minister did send us a fitting email earlier in the week titled yes. Halloween in May, which is kind of shadowy in its essence.
Right. And I seriously thought that when you became shadow minister, it was like you were in charge of all the monsters in the...
I mean, that kind of fits with like the black market and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So here is the email that Pat sent us. He says, "Hello, Robbie and Kyle. It's Patrick, measuring it at a 6'1 and a subtle 215 pounds. I've recently started binge-watching scary/horror movies and reading scary books during the quarantine as a way of fear inoculation to the general state of the world, and was wondering if you have any recommendations for scary movies or scary books. Also, what scary movie or book scares you the most? Finally, is there a movie you find scary that isn't supposed to be scary? With fright and indifference, Patrick." You're in the mood to be scared, Pat.
I am. It's a scary time.
He's proving his position as shadow minister, and also proving his necessity, because I don't think either of us are really scary movie or book people.
No, I'm too scared. I don't know. I like suspense. Like, I like page turners, but I don't like it when crap jumps out and stuff. Like, even in movies,
like pop-up books. Scary, but
yeah, exactly. Fireworks. I think I had a bad run-in with a Jack in the Box or something as a kid, and then ever since then, I've been very jumpy when things pop out of boxes. So I'm not really, like, even in movies that aren't supposed to be scary or suspenseful, when you just feel that something is about to happen, like it gets really quiet and still, and you know that you know what's coming, and it still freaks you out.
The score's holding that one note. It's like,
yep.
You're just waiting
for
it.
Yeah, it's hanging there. Yeah. Nothing really comes. I was not down with the Paranormal Activity movie ideas when they came around. That was one that, because even when my friends who like scary movies said, yeah, that crap freaked me out, I was like, nope, that's not in the cards for me. I'm trying to think of a book, though.
Yeah, I don't. The only scary movies that I've really, like, actually seen, Cabin in the Woods, which actually was pretty good.
That's a good one.
That's, like, the only, like, scary movie that I've seen besides the scary movies. But those aren't very scary.
I thought those were still scary.
I did just watch Parasite, which was kind of creeped me out, even though I don't think it's really supposed to or kind of supposed to. I was confused and a little scared.
That's kind of thrillery, suspenseful.
Yeah. One of the movies that scared me that shouldn't have scared me was the Titanic.
Wait, how did you get scared by the Titanic?
Because my sister was obsessed with Titanic, and she had, like, a book about the history of it. And before I saw the movie, I saw in this book a picture of, like, dead people that had pulled up from the ocean, and that just freaked me out. And so anything Titanic-related scared me for a significant period of time.
Has not been able to listen to Celine Dion since.
I was going to say, was it Celine that scared you? Like, do you get PTSD when you hear Celine come on?
No, we've, I think Celine's Celine. The only thing that makes that movie worth it.
Oh, wow, not Leo? What a slap in the face. Yeah. Young Leo and Kate? I think the most recent scary movie that I saw was called The Woman in Black, which starred Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, which was weird seeing him as not Harry Potter. It's the only thing I've ever seen him as not Harry Potter. For some reason, when I see Emma Watson, like, yeah, that's Hermione, but I've seen her in enough other things that I get it. But I don't think I will ever be able to look at Daniel Radcliffe and not think Harry Potter. Like, that's just who he is. I was exposed to the movie The Birds at far too young an age. I think I've watched some other Alfred Hitchcock movies growing up, too. My dad really liked to watch those. So I think, like, American Psycho and some of the other ones I've seen. But The Birds was, like, I was 6 years old or something. And that has ruined Birds forever for me. So I don't necessarily recommend that one, but that is one I know.
That does explain a lot about your beer or bird phobia.
Oh yeah, no, that is a cornerstone of my bird phobia. That, being chased by a goose through a park, and then being bitten by an emu. Those are like the three strikes against birds for me, and they all happened at a very young age. And then I was like, nope, I'm so done with this whole, all these species of flying creatures. I'm just not down for it. You know what scared me? One movie that I think scared me that maybe shouldn't have, but it kind of falls into the suspense category, was the Jurassic Park movies.
They have scary moments. I think,
yeah, they had scary moments. I don't think anybody would classify it as a scary movie, but like we were talking about, when they're just waiting and they know that there's dinosaurs around them and they just don't know where they are and you know they're about to pop up. I remember being pretty freaked out about that and having nightmares about dinosaurs when I was a kid.
What are some of your favorite scary movies and books that you've used to for fear inoculation here?
I like The Birds. I actually do like Alfred Hitchcock, so sucks to be you, Robbie.
It might be different now that I'm older. Like, I don't know, but I'm not watching that movie again. It's ruined. But if I was watching The Birds now for the first time and wasn't already afraid of birds, it could very well be a great movie. I don't know.
I'd recommend Robbie on Netflix is the movie Tremors with a young Kevin Bacon and Reba McEntire.
Oh. Reba in a movie.
Mm-hmm. It is very early 90s. It's quality, somewhat goofy, but there are scary parts to it.
Tremors. Okay. I might have to do a movie review next week on the pod.
Yeah, that's a nice, easier way into it.
Yeah, I've never understood people who, they like sit there and laugh at scary movies, and I kind of wish that I was like that, because I get that a lot of them are just terribly acted movies, but I've never been at that point.
This Tremors is pretty cheesy, but it still has its scary moments. Like the initial part is really scary, and then it gets kind of goofy towards the end.
I can't think of a book that I've ever been afraid of.
Something Wicked This Way Comes. It's kind of like 1950s, 1960s, like late summer carnival, and things go awry. Kind of got a little It flavor
like
to
Stranger
it.
Stranger Things.
Yeah. You get a lot of Stranger Things vibes from it, so.
Yeah, that's the title of a book that I would not read.
You read the dust cover, you're like, nah.
Something wicked's coming, I'm not going to be there for it.
Yeah. Unless it's the musical Wicked, in which case, maybe. All right, well, I might check out some of those. I wouldn't mind, I think, reading a scary book. I do sometimes worry that, because I will often have dreams, I think, that, because if I read before bed and then I fall asleep, sometimes I will, like, I just wake up not remembering what I dreamed, but knowing it had to do with that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see myself having some rough dreams after of like a carnival or whatever if I read that book. The Shining. Could read The Shining. It's a classic. Although, I've seen the movie, so I don't know if I'd still be scared by the book.
Did that scare you?
Yeah, I was a little older when I watched The Shining, and like, I'd seen the poster, you know, of Jack Nicholson sticking his face through and stuff. So it didn't get me as bad as I think it would have if I was younger. After The Birds, I was like done with any scary movie for a long time. Kyle, one thing not on our podcast planning segment, but that we've promised the people, is we talk about The Bachelor.
Yep. I was thinking about that when you brought up the movie review.
Yeah, that's exactly when I thought of it, too. Pat, you ever watched any of The Bachelor or any of those other crappy reality love shows?
I have not watched The Bachelor, but I love people's reviews of The Bachelor, just because I have no context, and they're talking about all these crazy things people do, and I'm like, who does this? But I kind of want to watch it, but I kind of don't.
It's the thing about it is it's a large amount of investment, like time investment. Like they're all very long episodes, and like if you're on the fence of watching it, I would say don't watch it.
Yeah, if I could get like an after season like DVD special, like how they, like, you know, sports teams do, like here's our season highlights. If I could get something like that.
Well, that's essentially what our podcast is. And so just make sure you keep listening to the podcast. We'll walk you through it week by week. We're only in week two. So if you were ever going to watch a season of The Bachelor, this one has a singing component to it.
That's true. That this one you can watch along with us. So it's more of a social thing as opposed to just watching The Bachelor. And it is Listen to Your Heart. So it's not just The Bachelor. It's The Bachelor Presents Listen to Your Heart.
Ah, yeah. I might have to check this out. Yeah. I did listen to the review. It kind of got me intrigued from last week. Kind of sounds
selling
like
you on it.
Yep. Kind of sounds like they're trying to recreate the magic of Fleetwood Mac Rumors with the love triangle stuff going on.
Exactly.
That's what it's like.
We'll just exactly.
Throw a bunch of lovers together and see what happens.
Yep.
I think that Jamie would be Stevie Nicks. That would make Trevor Lindsay Buckingham, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's kind of a stretch there, but
hard to make those equations.
Yeah. It actually might be more the Julia Sheridan. I don't
know. Yeah, poor Sheridan.
Yeah, we're starting to see. So on episode two, hopefully people watched along with us. There are some love triangles forming. They also brought some new blood onto the show in week two. So the week started with eight girls and eight guys, and it was the guys' turns to have the roses. But they brought in three new girls over the course of the week to basically battle it out for those eight roses. And one of those girls, this was kind of the biggest twist of the week, I think. One of the girls knew one of the guys from back in real life and told all the girls in the house that he cheated on his ex-girlfriend.
They clearly brought her in just to stir stuff up.
Yeah, which honestly, genius producing. You know, got to do it.
Casting agents earning their money.
Exactly.
Yeah, somebody did their homework and found out that this guy might have cheated on his ex-girlfriend and just went and found like her hottest friend and invited her on the show. I think that's probably what happened.
It's like, can you sing in the shower? Good enough.
Yeah.
You'll probably be kicked off before you ever have to sing.
Yeah, you don't need to sing. Yeah. We need you to stir stuff up here. Yeah.
And she was it. Like, she even came in and was like, I'm not going to care about anybody's feelings. I am just here to mix it up and try to win.
She came in guns blazing. As soon as Trevor comes back from his date, she is ready to go. He goes, can I get settled for a second before we talk? She goes, no, we're talking now.
I thought that was super funny too. Yeah, she's like, no, I think we should talk now. And he played it off. He was like, oh, okay, that's fine. He must be who the hell is this?
And then she's getting all pissed at him for not telling, what's her name, Jamie, that he emotionally cheated on his last girlfriend on their first date, which you shouldn't cheat emotionally or physically on anybody. But I imagine people who have cheated oftentimes don't bring it up on their next first date.
Definitely not.
Right. And I don't know why people would expect a higher moral character on The Bachelor than you would even in normal life. I did have this debate kind of with myself, and Kyle and I were texting during it. This chick, I can't even remember her name. I think it was Savannah or something. She said that she thought that emotional cheating was worse than physical cheating, which I kind of raised an eyebrow at because they're both bad. Like, do not get me wrong. I'm not advocating for emotional cheating here. Like, you shouldn't be telling other women you love them or other men you love them while you're in a relationship with someone else. I kind of imagine that might have been what the emotional cheating was, like basically setting up your next relationship.
Yeah, said she saw text messages on his phone.
Yeah, so I'm guessing it must have been some kind of language that definitely showed he was interested in someone else, right? But I still don't know that I would rather have someone, if you had to pick one or the other, I don't think that like having sex with someone is better than emotionally cheating on
them.
There's
a question for the people. Would you rather your significant other text another person or have physical relations with another person?
And that, when you phrase it that way, I'm like, you'd have to be an idiot to want to rather have your partner have sex with someone else. But that seemed to be the argument that was being made on the show. Pat, what do you think?
I think that even like just physically cheating has some emotional components to it.
Yes.
That, so it's like a little bit of both. Like, you're not just going to go out and bang some random person because everything's fine and dandy at home. There's definitely some emotional problems at home that you're going out to seek some, you know, other stuff. So,
agreed.
Right. Yeah.
And then my biggest problem with this Natasha girl who they brought in to blow stuff up was not just that she came in and blew stuff up just for fun. It's that she then plays poor Ryan, my guy Ryan, who's just a little nerdy guy just sitting there waiting for something to happen. And she's like, oh, I need a rose to stay in this thing. So she just goes and just starts making out with him just so that he gives her the rose. And it worked.
It totally works. I didn't get that at all, but all three of the new girls got roses and totally, you know, undercut the three of the girls that had been there since the beginning. And I get that that wasn't that long ago, but it was interesting. And I do wonder how different it would have been. I think the guys might have been easier and more susceptible to those kind of tactics than the other way around. I think
most
that if a guy did that where he's just like, hey, I need to stay in the game, I'm going to make out with you now, that would have been totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the more sinister version of Sheridan's, oh, I need to stay in this game, let me write this song for you.
Yeah, I'm going to take that strategy and I'm going to make it my own. I think that one thing that kind of, there was one dude who seems to have like half of the girl's attention. Like,
yes, there Brandon was like three or has his pick of the litter.
Yeah, he was the one with the rose this week, and he, like, when he stepped up there, there were probably three or four girls that thought they were going to get it, which is
weird. Yeah, well, some of them, I mean, it's all based on how it's edited and put together, but some of them, it's like, why did you think you had a chance to get it?
In that position, did he pick, like, based on, like, musical abilities then? Because he's like, oh, I already got the love sewn up with these three or four. Who best is the Tennille to my captain?
He picked the person that he went out on the date with, and they did sing at some jazz club. So he has sang with the person that he picked. But we haven't really gotten deep into the singing part of it yet. I think that's coming up next episode, so I'm looking forward to seeing how that twists things up.
Yeah, because from the very beginning I've been wondering, are people going to choose their love interest based on who gives them the best shot in the music part of it and like sacrifice the love piece, or are they going to stick with the love piece and possibly sacrifice the music part of it? Like, I think that choice has to be coming at some point.
That was my thought is like, what's the end goal of this? Like, I just see the last episode coming down to the two people, and it's like, you can choose love or you can choose this recording contract.
I'm very curious what the marketing for this show has been very interesting, because I have no idea what the end goal is.
Yeah, they don't say what the prize is. Do you get a recording contract?
This whole thing works. So that's part of what I'm hoping to find out here soon. I do think something like that's going to happen to this Chris and Brie couple who went on the date to the Guitar Center.
Quality.
What a romantic date that was.
Everything seems too easy for them, so I feel like they're going to have to get some bad feedback when they sing together, and that's going to try and break them up. That's my prediction here.
Ooh, could be. That would be devious. Yeah, Pat's kind of describing a Hunger Games type of thing. It's like, well, you can either both die, or one of you can kill the other one and take the contract. Like, what if, is it the duet thing all the way to the end? Do you think, if they break up in the middle and start with someone else? Or what if someone isn't paired up and has to, like, go up there by themselves? Or, I mean, I guess as long as they keep the numbers even, there would always have to be someone to sing with, but you're just like, I'm not romantically interested in you at all, but no one's romantically interested in me, so I guess we sing together.
Yeah, I'm hoping that with the singing portion this week, we get a little bit more clarity on how this thing is supposed to wrap up. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think that you might see, you know, some people being like, I didn't even notice this guy before, but he sings so beautifully that I want that now, and I'm going to throw away this thing that I have. Or like, I really liked this guy until I got on stage with him, and he sucks. So I'm going to bounce and go find someone else. It is an interesting component. I knew that I get drawn in by this crap all the time. I mean, I don't watch very much reality TV at all, but
you get sucked in.
Because I'm not going to lie, I get pulled in to this kind of thing. Like, and I sit there and I hate it, but I sit there and I just judge. Like, I become super judgmental. Like, I'm currently watching 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days. And I can't get enough. Apparently that's what a lot of people are doing on quarantine, because I keep seeing pictures of these people that are on this show. It's like, oh my God, I'm not the only one watching this show. So there's another one if you want to have a conversation with me about 90 Day Fiancé, come on the pod. Kyle, before the break.
Yes.
I've completed your challenge.
Yes.
Of the week.
Mostly. You still have one more shave left, but
I do. I will shave this evening. I didn't have a chance to shave.
The substantive part of the challenge you have.
You should shave on the break.
During the break, yes. Quick shave. And if you follow us on Instagram, you might have seen the story of me shaving my face in pieces, as promised. So you get to see the before and after, as well as the goatee and the mustache look.
The mustache along was the way. Top-notch.
It wasn't bad. It still didn't. The biggest difference in my brain was between mustache and totally bald face.
Really?
I kind of figured that it would be from full beard to goatee. I figured that would be the most shocking thing, but for whatever reason, it was revealing the upper lip that really just
really shocked you.
Made me look way younger. And like way, it just looked that to me. That was the most shocking difference from picture to picture. I don't know why though. I can't That's explain funny. It. Yeah. So anyway, my challenge for you this week, Kyle, and we've talked off air about this. You're gonna have to pull out your chopsticks, because for 7 days, every single meal you eat has to be eaten with chopsticks. So I would recommend not having soup on your meal plan, because that would take you a real long time to just dip and lick the chopsticks clean.
I mean, you could just drink the broth and then you have whatever's left and you chopstick that.
I guess I could allow that.
If you're going chopsticks 24/7, you gotta get creative with how you're eating food.
Yeah, I guess I get that. But yeah, no forks, no knives. So I did say that if you're eating something like a chicken breast or a sandwich or something, you can use a knife to cut that up, but you still have to eat it with chopsticks. Yes. So if anybody wants to follow Kyle's journey this week, you're going to have to follow us on Instagram, at @2gnomes1pig. Make sure you do that. I think this one might be interesting, Kyle. I think you might actually kind of enjoy it. It's not terrible.
I think I'll have fun with it.
Yeah, it's not terrible. It could be worse. It might be a little inconvenient to have to like cut up your sandwich into pieces.
Yeah, I'm more excited for this one than I was for wearing my clothes backwards.
This is essentially playing with your food, so.
Which I've done for my entire life.
And I wonder if you'll get better. Will you get better at using chopsticks?
I imagine so. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah. Make sure you eat some diverse foods, you know? I want to see you eat rice, and I want to see you eat salad. I want to see you eat a salad with chopsticks. Oh, yeah. Just some things that you wouldn't normally eat.
Fish and ice.
With chopsticks. Yeah. The Antarctic buffet. Fish, ice, and blubber with chopsticks. You're a global man.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's take a break, Kyle.
Let's do it.
And then when we come back, we got more with Shadow Minister Pat Hewitt. That was almost like two different people. It's a crowded room now. All right. So we're going to kick off this second segment with Social Hour. Our question this week comes via the Instagrams from @esitzer. And her question was, she sent us along a picture, so it was a challenge or a question that was posed elsewhere on the internet, but I thought it was kind of a doozy. If you had to spend $7,000 in one day at one store, what store would that be and what would you buy?
This is a tough one because I'm not very good at spending money. And maybe it's because we were just talking about listen to your heart, but I could do some damage in a music store.
Go to a guitar center. Mm-hmm. You could probably spend $7,000 pretty quickly there too.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, do I like want to go to like a Dollar Tree and get like 7,000 items, or do I want to go
you
to
just
like
gotta deal with 7,000 items,
or do I want to go to like a fancy place and get like one or two really expensive items?
Yeah, I think that if you got 7,000 items and just turned your garage into a Dollar Tree but charged $2 for everything, just think of the profits. Be amazing. I don't know why normal people don't just do that.
My other thought was Home Depot, because I could get a lot of house stuff done with $7,000 at Home Depot.
Spoken like a homeowner right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of had the... I'm in between you guys, I think, where I want to get multiple things. Like, yeah, you could go to a car dealership and not even get a full car for $7,000, right? But one-stop shop. Or, yeah, you could go to, like, a Target or something and buy all kinds of crap. I think that it would kind of depend, and I don't think that Amazon is a fair answer. Because that's just like the internet. Like you can't just say you're shopping at the internet.
That's not a store you go to. Unless you're going to like their Amazon grocery stores.
Yeah. I'm wondering if Costco might be a good spot because it's high quality stuff, but you can get a lot of different things. Like I could get a new like whole entertainment setup. I could go get a new TV. I could go get a couch, to lounge around in, speakers, refrigerator, like they got all the appliances.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, like a Best Buy, get like a nice like desktop computer.
Yeah, Best Buy would be good. Costco, yeah. I feel like you'd end up buying in bulk some stuff that you shouldn't have bought in bulk, and then you have to store that somewhere.
A lot of pretzels. Well,
$7,000 of Costco sliced pizza and chicken bakes. That's all it is. Well, and I feel like Costco used to be more bulk stuff than it is. Like, you don't buy the couches or the TVs or the appliances in bulk. Like, that doesn't really apply to those things. I wouldn't spend it on food items at Costco.
You say that until you walk into a Costco with $7,000.
You're getting a lot of fruit snacks.
I might get famished and need and need a 92-pack of Orbit gum. But otherwise, I feel like I'd spend the bulk of it on like appliances or something like that, which that's kind of a good place to go. If I was remaking a whole entertainment system, I would go to Costco, honestly, because they got good stuff for a pretty reasonable price. Best Buy, I feel like sometimes is more expensive than Costco for a lot of the same stuff. And I like the idea of getting like a new couch and furniture that goes with it and
the sweatpants to wear while you watch the new TV and couch.
Yeah, you can get books and flannel and a camping equipment. Costco's pretty, if you go at the right time, you can get a lot of camping stuff. And
a bookstore is another good option.
That would be good.
Man, can you imagine the damage you could do at a bookstore with $7,000?
Yeah.
Get like some quality first editions or some rare books.
I don't know if I would appreciate rare books as much as I would need to invest that kind of money in them.
Then you resell them and then you make money. I'll just invest my $7,000 in an index fund and let it grow 7% year over year.
worst answer on a podcast ever. That is not a store. Like we said, you can't put it on the internet anywhere.
It was a yoke.
So yeah, I like the Best Buy idea. I think I'd pick Costco or something for similar reasons. But yeah, if you're moving into a new house or something, I think that Home Depot or Bed Bath & Beyond or something like that, I think anywhere that you can get house appliances would be pretty useful.
We should get Pat back.
Yeah, we have to hit pause here briefly because we seem to have lost our shadow minister has returned to the shadows.
Yeah.
And is no longer on our Zoom call.
So my cat knocked over the router and killed the Wi-Fi. So I had to go in the other room and plug it in. I was like, oh, I'll just sit here by the Wi-Fi to keep him away from it.
Pesky cats.
Yeah, well, and seeing pictures of your cat, it seems like that's about as active as it gets.
Yes. He does have a tendency to just, like, walk around, like, on tables to get to couches and other lane spots. And he's like, oh, this router is in my way. Brah.
Sounds like a cat.
Yep.
Pretty classic. Okay, so I think we're ready to move on, Kyle, to our next segment.
Which is?
Called?
Dysfunctional Dictionary. So I have gone through the dictionary.com words of the day and picked out a few that I did not know what they mean. Maybe you do, and if you do know, then that will be bonus points for you. But I was going to say the words, and you're going to have to tell me what you think they mean and give me a brief etymology of the word as well. Are we ready?
Yes. Ready. Well, are we doing this like Robbie does one, then I do one, or?
No, you both will answer for each word. We'll see who's better. We'll see
who gets closer.
Our first word is proxemics.
That is a pharmaceutical drug to cure Alzheimer in weasels.
Close.
It is a hydrogen peroxide derivative used to clean up the Leaning Tower of Pisa because it's Italian in origin.
Ah.
Etymology, Italian Robbie.
Origin. I like it.
Proximo popped into my head from Gladiator.
All right. Our real answer is the study of spatial requirements of humans and animals and the effects of population density on behavior, communication, and social interaction.
Robbie That's did close. Have weasels.
Yeah. I thought that I got the whole thing right, except it was going to be ferrets instead of weasels, and I was going to... I was going to argue I was correct, but it's the
feels like an apt word for this time. Word number two is an adjective, saponaceous.
Saponaceous.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Does it give you one?
I do not know what I don't know how to use it in a sentence without giving away the answer.
Saponaceous is the Russian tradition of large hairy men wrestling in, it's an event, like it's a festival, the Saponaceous Festival, where large hairy men wrestle each other shirtless in small kiddie pools filled with tree sap and leaves.
That is very saponaceous.
It's like Festivus, but Russian with tree sap and large hairy men.
Saponaceous is a adjective describing things that happen in September. So the fall foliage is very saponaceous this year. And its origin is basic white girls.
So I like that
we heard two different words. I went with sap.
I heard
and
sap.
It was sep.
It's sap. Robbie heard it correctly.
Oh, well, I still stand by mine.
It's so, still probably origin from white
girls. The actual definition is resembling soap or soapy.
Oh.
I mean,
that's fall.
That's probably an older
derivative.
It's
from,
probably derivative from the Russian mud wrestling because they needed the soap after this the sap.
That's what I'm saying, right? I think it's just it's point A and point B. I think that it just happened somewhere there in the middle. It's like, and then we came up with Jell-O wrestling because we're Americans and fat, and so we turned the tree sap into Jell-O because we don't like natural things.
All right, third and final word here. We have fettle. It's a noun.
Oh, I know what fettle is. It's the undercarriage of a pregnant hippopotamus.
And how'd you get that? Show your work.
This is not math class, okay? I saw that in a documentary, and it actually helped design the hippo that was in the Madagascar movies. It was like a how did they create this? And it actually relates to fetal, like the fetal position, because pregnant hippopotamuses and their undercarriages end up producing babies, which then go into the fetal position. And so...
They made fetuses. It was the babies that go into the fetal position.
It was in my head. But that's not what I don't tell it the easy way, Kyle.
Was it a noun?
To the imagination.
It is a noun.
Yep.
A fettle is the lid on a kettle, so you have to put the fettle on the kettle in order to have your tea. So it's British in origin.
That does sound it like something is. That the Brits would say.
It is. Fettle on the kettle.
It is a state or condition. Like if someone's in a bad shape, they're in bad fettle.
That's dumb.
Not as good.
Both
as
of ours were better than that. Carriage. Yeah, both of us are better than that. Watch, next time you watch a nature documentary and there's a pregnant hippopotamus on the screen, my voice will pop into your head and you will think fettle.
You will think fettle.
And that's my platform for my next run at Political Glory / the Nobel Prize.
All right, that is the end of Dysfunctional Dictionary, and we are on to Preguntas with Patrick.
I like that segment, Kyle. I think we got to bring that one back.
Yeah, that can be done.
All right, Pat, what are your preguntas? This is like your version of Kyle's Question Corner.
My pregunta is this, DS, is what would your professional wrestling name be?
The Fettle Kettle.
Professional wrestling like WWE?
Yeah, like, you know, Macho Man Randy Savage or something like that.
The Rock, The Undertaker.
Kyle Mad Dog McGowan, you know.
Philip. Just Philip.
Just Phil.
The Gas Man.
Smokes everyone out.
Yeah. I could wear a gas attendant uniform out there too. Or wear a gas mask. Yeah, there's all kinds of ways I could go with it.
Dang, that's a good one. I'm trying to think of like what's like a defining characteristic that I could make a name around.
Silence.
The silent sufferer.
I don't know. What are your characteristics as a human? I've never thought about that.
It's not just characteristics. It's like characteristics that would make like a wrestling character.
Yeah. Inspire fear. And just be like...
like the Gas Man.
Who wouldn't be afraid to see me coming? Wearing a shirt that says the Gas Man. Beverly.
I'm trying to think of some of the names that I remember from the... I've gone to two live WWE shows in my life.
What if you're just like Average Joe?
Quotidian Kyle.
Quotidian. Or just Tidian. Or Titty.
Wrestling's a family event. Second one. What member of the Beatles do you most identify with?
Ooh. George Harrison.
That's a good answer. That's the one who most people want to be. And then Paul. I'm afraid I'm a Ringo.
I don't know.
I feel like you in this podcast, you are either the Paul or the John, and I'm the George. Like, I'm the technical guy, and you're like the face.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. It's like the crap that comes out of my mouth might be Ringo-esque, but the fact that I don't sit in the back.
No,
I'm not really a behind the scenes person, and so I would like to say Paul. I'd like to say Paul, but you know, it's hard to compare yourself to Paul McCartney because he's much more gifted and talented in every way. But you know,
Paul McCartney cannot be the gas man like you can be the gas man.
Nope.
Thanks, Kyle. I think. Yeah, I feel you are the George though. Like you're the beat, you know. Like you're the gas that makes the car go.
You just got gas on the brain, don't you?
I do, man. Not just in the brain, but yeah. I'll go with Paul.
All right.
Pat's a John.
Yeah. Dark, mysterious.
Heck. Yeah, not a Yoko. That you're not dumb enough to be with a Yoko. Your cat might be a Yoko.
My cat might be Yoko. My cat pulled a Yoko move, ruining the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I actually do think, because your cat tried to ruin the podcast. tried to break us up.
He did.
Yeah, I'm sold on it now.
Final question. What sports team has the best logo, excluding the teams that you guys love? So you can't just say the Blazers because you love the Blazers.
Actually, most of the teams that I like, I don't think have great logos.
I think the Warriors have a great logo, so I'm sad I can't pick that one. Can college count?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do American sports.
I've always been really impressed with Washington State's logo.
Yep. That's one that came to my head, too.
The fact that they worked in the WSU into the shape of a cougar. Like, I didn't even know it said WSU for a long time. So
yeah, I grew up in the state around the logo all the time, and it took me until, like, the sixth grade. I remember I was sitting in health class when I finally made the realization that the letters were in there.
Yeah.
And the U is the little mouth part. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I hate the team, but I really think the Yankees have just like a really good logo.
It's just classic. There's a couple classic ones out there, like the Cubs and the Yankees, that I think but they're simple. And so I don't even know. That's what makes them good, but also it kind of makes me not want to pick them because, you know, they're simple and they've been around for so long. You're not going to mess that up. I'm trying to think of other creative logos that are out there that are more modern. I really do like the Warriors one.
The Warriors one's not bad.
It's way better now than it used to be.
Yes.
It used to be really dumb.
Just like I like the classic Sonics one, but I'm a Sonics fan, so that's cheating.
I actually kind of like the Astros logo. It did get ruined because it's also now it's pretty closely aligned with like a gang. Like there's a gang out there that basically uses the Astros logo.
Yeah, that shows you it's got, you know, brand recognition.
It's out there in multiple ways. But
the 76ers, their logo itself isn't always my favorite, but I feel like all of their branding is always great. Like all of their uniforms are good. Like
the 76ers, like that name is pretty good.
Yeah.
I think it's stupid that the Rams just redesigned their logo to look like a better version of what the Chargers have designed as their logo. It looks like a really good lightning bolt, basically.
Yeah, the Rams was no good. I feel like NFL doesn't have many great logos.
Yeah, it's easier to think of logos I don't like than logos I do like, which is interesting. All right, I think that's it. Is that it for Preguntas with Patrick?
That is for this time.
Oh, keep the people coming back for more. I know you have endless questions in there.
Yeah, every all 4 years, Pat will come on the podcast and typically the questions.
The last time you were on the pod, we were sitting in Kyle's empty, empty apartment.
That was
apartment.
In the last podcast that was recorded in Studio A.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep. There was no chairs, no furniture whatsoever. We just had the recording stuff sitting in the middle of the floor, and we were all sitting on the floor around it.
Mm-hmm. Great acoustics.
Yep. Memories.
Very echoey. Memories.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap it up. And we have a very important announcement regarding Frankie Muniz. So don't go anywhere. And we're back again on the pod. All right.
On the pod.
Kyle.
Yep. Our tweet of the week this week is brought to you by Bill Barnwell. He's an NFL writer for ESPN. And the tweet has a picture. So the words say, how does this cricket umpire have the most intimidating nickname I've ever heard? And then it's a picture of the cricket umpire's Wikipedia page. And it says, nickname, Slow Death.
No. Really?
Yep. Stephen Anthony Buckner, cricket umpire, nickname, Slow Death.
That's a good wrestling name.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really good wrestling name, actually. Well, and doesn't cricket take forever? Like, did he earn that nickname, maybe? Because
he must have earned the nickname. I don't know how.
He somehow makes games last forever.
6'3" from Montego Bay, Jamaica.
When you first said cricket umpire, I was thinking like a small insect dressed as an umpire. And I was like, it's like a meme. I was like, what?
I haven't seen that one.
I was thinking cricket wireless. I was like, what does that even mean? What is it? What would
Happy birthday to Earl Thomas, who's turning 31. The number one person on famousbirthdays.com today. Another good wrestling name, Mr. Beast, turning 22 today.
I feel like Mr. Beast is like a dog name.
A dog name?
Yeah, either that or like if you spoke English as a second language and didn't really know how to refer to someone, you would call them Mr. Beast.
Is that what you call Marshawn Lynch? Just Mr. Beast?
Hello, Mr. Beast.
That's what you would call Marshawn Lynch if you didn't speak English as a first language and didn't really know how to refer to him. But you knew that you did a Google search and the Beast popped up. All right. Regarding our ongoing feud with Francis Muniz. It has come to our attention. And Kyle, I gotta be upfront here. I gotta be honest. I've lost that fire in me that I had originally against Frankie.
Yeah.
I was very upset to begin with, and then it just kinda turned into a bit, which was funny. And recently it's just felt more like bullying.
Well, like, his tweets have gotten super sad, and so it's like, it feels bad to pile on sadness.
Right, and yeah, some of his tweets are like him trying to be funny. It's like, okay, this is why I hate you. And then some of his other tweets are like, oh, he's married, and he's running an olive oil company, and he's like a normal human being.
But he's talking about his olive oil during the quarantine.
Yeah. So, I think that... how long has this feud been going on? It's been years. I mean, we've ended every podcast for at least a few years with Screw You, Frankie Muniz. We launched a whole campaign against him on Dancing in the Stars.
Yeah, whenever Kanye's album, the one after Yeezus, whenever that one came out, that's when we started this because we stole the idea of getting in a feud from Kanye West. So
that's right. Yeah. And that was a few Kanye albums ago. So it's been a minute. I think that the time has come to no longer say screw you, Frankie Muniz.
Yeah.
I think it's a chapter that we have written and we have taken to its limits, and now we just need to turn the page and find someone else to hate. Or not.
Or maybe not
we need
hate.
To just like, find someone just like, hey, love us. Love us.
Yes, I feel like you can only have hatred in your heart for so long before you need to let it go. And I think that if we want to progress as a podcast like we want to, then we need to let it go in search of better things.
Yep. We're still not happy, Frankie, with you, because all we did was ask you to get into a fight with us like 4 years ago.
It would have been
easy. We didn't ask a lot.
You could have avoided this whole thing.
Yeah, just by tweeting at us when we were making fun of you. and say, like, hey, you guys suck. And we would have been like, great, that's all we wanted. That's all we needed, was just to tell us that we suck. That's you responding, and that's what we wanted. But this chapter is hereby over, and so we will not be saying screw you to anyone at the end of the podcast anymore.
Unless we really feel like it that week, but it's not going to
be that, a continuing that week, segment. But yeah, we're not going to have it be a continuing segment unless somebody pisses us off. Every
I'm not going to rule it out, but we just watched the Michelle Obama documentary on Netflix yesterday. So if anybody goes low, we're going to try and go high.
Yeah, we have not been going high. So that chapter's closing. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the podcast. If you had, this is your platform to share with the people whatever you would like to share, whether that's advice, whether that is a rant of sorts, whatever you would like to communicate with the people. We're leaving you space here at the end of the pod to share what you feel.
On the theme of for giving past slights, like Frankie not wanting to fight you, there is a Philip Larkin quote, which is very applicable to these dark times. And it ends by saying, we should take care of each other. We should be kind while there is still time. And I think in these troubling times that is some words we can all take to heart.
I like it. Because we're all going to die someday, so there's not always going to be time.
That was light. That wasn't shadows at all.
That was light. That was light from the dark.
Wow. The shadows have depth. Nobody knows.
That's how you win a Pulitzer, Robbie.
By quoting someone else's writing.
Exactly.
Plagiarism wins Pulitzers.
I gave him credit.
I was going to say, yeah, but if you want the Pulitzer, you better steal it and hope no one finds out. Otherwise, you just campaign for him to win the Pulitzer.
I like that. Be kind while there's still time.
That was nice. That was a really nice note to end on. Another nice note to end on, which Kyle would have to eat with chopsticks this week, is never fear the bacon.